Welcome to another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Schmelk, Meadow, you, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. You know, I haven't looked at your tweets all week, so we'll definitely do some tweets at some point during today's show. We'll get you in early and often on the phones. And lands the Giants and Chargers, 2-0-4 teams. Something's got to give. But let's first talk about the Giants injury report because there are some important names on there. Let's start the two guys that are out first. No Paul Perkins and no Weston Richburg.
So Brett Jones is going to get his first ever start at center because his previous two starts were at the guard position. And he had filled in for Weston Richburg when he went out in the last game against the Bucks because of concussion protocol. So it's not as if they're throwing somebody into the mix that doesn't have experience. But you're talking about now in the span of five games, John, this is the fourth different offensive line alignment in which you've had different guys play next to one another.
And by the way, it might change more because one of the guys that are questionable is John Jerry with the hamstring, which could throw further things into flux.
Yes, meaning Pugh would probably go back to left guard. If Bobby Hart returns, he'd return to right tackle. Fluker, right guard. I mean, you're talking about my favorite word, the game of musical chairs, which, by the way, Justin Pugh adopted this week when he spoke with the media. So kudos to Justin for at least utilizing the terminology.
I'm sure he got that from you.
Oh, without a doubt. I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay.
Yes.
Two other guys that are questionable, and to me, this is a huge factor in the game, to be quite honest with you, Lance. I cannot stress this enough. Watching the Chargers on offense this week, if you pressure Phillip Rivers, he struggles. He can't move at all.
He's like a statue.
He makes Eli Manning look like Marcus Mariota running around in that backfield, okay?
Well, especially after last week.
He has cement in his shoes. If you pressure him, he will throw the ball up for grabs. He'll make mistakes. They'll struggle. If you don't, he will sit back there and he will pick you apart. I don't care how good your secondary is. Phillip Rivers can still throw the football and read defenses. If Vernon and JPP both play, both are questionable. How good are they going to be? How much pressure can they get? And if they don't play, what the hell are the Giants going to do to create some pass pressure?
Yeah, I think that's a big question, Mark. I mean, you can't assume that both of them are going to play, as you noted. You can't assume that even if both of them play that they're going to be 100%.
Like Vernon last week.
So if that's the case, then we're probably going to see some Kerry Wynn and Romeo Okwara, which we also did see last week when Vernon could not finish the game. And will the level of productivity remain the same, or will somebody step up? And, you know, Spags is at the point where he can only experiment so much, and I thought he brought up a good point when he spoke to the media, John, the other day, because a lot of people were throwing out, well, maybe you could toy with Devon Kennard, because he's the type of jack-of-all-trades type of player. And then Spags said, well, wait a minute. If you want to take him out of the strong side linebacker position, now I'm downgrading strong side linebacker.
Well, you could do it theoretically on third downs if you wanted to.
But he's also looking for production on first and second down,
right,
too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also plays into the struggles in terms of the run game, which also you need help from your defensive ends. Remember, it's not so much about getting the sacks, John. It's about making sure that the guys protect the edges, which Vernon and JPP have done effectively over the course of their careers. When you remove them from the game plan, it's not only a question mark now about are you getting to the opposing quarterback, are you stopping the run when guys are running towards the edges?
Right, and as we know, the Giants have been one of the worst teams against the run defensively so far this year. Luckily for them,
yeah,
the Chargers are just as bad offensively and defensively against the run. The Giants 28th in the league stopping the run. The Chargers 31st in the league stopping the run. But the Chargers have struggled to run the football, just 29th in the league offensively running the ball. Melvin Gordon's high for the year has been 79 yards. He's averaging 3.1 yards per carry. He's a good running back. He showed that last year. The Giants have to make sure this is not the game where Melvin Gordon finally gets going here. They've played three good defenses, I should say. The Dolphins' defense is okay, but it's not great. The Chiefs, the Eagles, and the Broncos all are very good defenses. In fact, the Broncos and Eagles are the top two run defenses in the league right now. So I think that has something to do with his lack of production. But you're right. It still starts with stopping the run, Lance. If they let the Chargers run the ball, they're going to pound Melvin Gordon. They'll run him 27, 28 times. They don't care.
Now, they'd love to do that. The Chargers coaching staff said part of the reason why they don't think they've run the ball effectively is because of the lack of at-bats. You know, I understand you mentioned Gordon's numbers and they don't jump off the charts, but they've trailed in every single game. The Chargers and the Giants, there's so many similarities between these two teams. It's kind of scary, John, but to me, one of the most notable similarities is both of these teams are second to last and dead last in terms of first quarter point differential. The Giants are being outscored 23-0 in the first quarter. The Chargers are being outscored 34-7. So that's minus 27 for the Chargers, minus 23 for the Giants. And why do I bring that up? Well, if you're down early, that means that you're then in the formations of pass happy type of offense where you have to constantly throw the football and you're not allowing your running game to do the heavy lifting. That's the problem for the Chargers. They have the personnel to run the football, and I don't think their offensive line has gotten enough credit because they've actually done a pretty good job protecting Phillip Rivers if you look at the amount of sacks they've given up, which is just 4. The problem is they've been playing from behind. They've been playing catch-up, so that means that they really haven't been able to have that game where they jump out and they establish the run. And, you know, this is the type of game where I think they're hoping to do that because of the Giants' struggles in taking early leads. And remember, the Bucs came in averaging just over 70 yards per game, and what did they do? They hit the century mark and then some.
Right, and keep an eye on Joe Barksdale. He's missed practice for the Chargers this week. They have not released their injury report yet for today. Not surprising, they're on the West Coast, but something else to keep an eye on for the Chargers' offensive line.
Yeah, he's the main injury. Other than that, I think they should be full go. I know Russell Okung is dealing with some bumps and bruises, but I don't think there's any threat about him missing time. Matt Slauson was dealing with the triceps injury, but he actually wound up returning to practice the other day. So Barksdale, I think, is the only guy, and Barksdale, obviously, their right tackle.
Long-term injury, though, their one corner is still out, obviously, right? Verrett, who got hurt the first week of the
season.
Year? Correct,
yeah.
Exactly. So he's not there, obviously, but that's not anything that's new. That's
correct.
Why he's not on the rosters. You see he's on injured reserve. So that is a guy that they miss, but they do have a good veteran in Casey Hayward at corner, who Ben McAdoo spoke about earlier in the week at his press conference, had good things to say about him. But they don't have a great secondary. They play a lot of that cover three stuff. Because of their defensive coordinator, obviously, from the Seahawks, the former head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, so Gus Bradley. So they have to, Lance, pretty much run the same type of defense you saw the Eagles run, but I think they'll probably execute it a lot better because they have better players in the secondary.
Well, Casey Hayward, as you mentioned, is their lockdown corner. He made the Pro Bowl last year. They're really working at a lot of younger guys with Jason Verrett banged up. And, you know, they have some young linebackers that have made some names for themselves. To me, the strength of the defense is the front four, John. I mean, that's where they make their money.
Oh, yeah.
They're hoping that Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa can continue to wreak havoc. I think their defensive tackles at times could be overlooked. You know, they have a few veterans. Brandon Mebane was with the Seahawks, so he has some ties to Gus Bradley. And then also Corey Legit, who was their first-round pick in 2011, who's been with the team for quite some time. He's actually probably one of the most long-standing players on the roster right now, given all the changes that they've made over the last few years. So, you know, they've got a very good front four that can stop the run when they're effective and also could get to the quarterback. This is a team that's had 12 sacks in 4 games. So you do the math, they're averaging clearly 3 per contest. And those two guys in particular, I mentioned Ingram and Bosa, you know, if you don't protect them and they get going early, all that does is it doesn't just give the defense confidence, which needs confidence to begin with because of their struggles, but it's going to change field position and it's going to give the offense more opportunities, which they've been lacking over the course of this season. And I know we talk about this every single week, because let's face it, the Eagles provided a challenge, the Bucs provided a challenge, and the Giants' offensive line deserves credit in combo with Eli Manning getting rid of the football quick enough that they have not given up any sacks over the last 2 weeks.
And Eli moved in the pocket really well last week against the Bucs too. Actually, we go back, look at the tape. The Bucs actually had more dirtiness in that pocket than you would think watching the game live, but Eli did a really good job of not panicking when guys were around his feet. He's hung in there and he made some good throws.
Yeah, he made good decisions in terms of knowing when to run out of the pocket, John, and get into the end zone, which he did with the rushing score. And I agree with you. We pointed this out on Monday when I was on with Jeff, that I thought he handled himself in the pocket. Not that we've never seen him do this, but it was by far one of the most impressive performances because he extended plays without necessarily having to go crazy and run outside of the pocket. So I thought that was extremely impressive. But, you know, this defensive line, I think, is going to pose somewhat of a different challenge, mainly because Ingram and Bosa are interchangeable. They move those guys around. They don't necessarily keep them on one spot.
No, they don't.
And if you're Gus Bradley, you know, you're going to look to test Bobby Hart because he's coming off of injury.
If he's there. At right
if
tackle.
He's there, of course. You're also going to obviously be looking to test Ereck Flowers. And then, you know, don't overlook. I'm sure Gus Bradley saying to himself, he's going to try to move guys around inside too, especially with the Giants changing things at center and guard.
And they do stand Melvin Ingram up inside and let him rush him that joker position. And look, you can do it occasionally, but you can't consistently help on your right and left tackle. So, you know, talking to people around the Giants, you know, those guys on the bookends, you can't help both of them. You put them on both sides, you can survive. You can assign another guy to that side to help. But when they're separated, it makes things a lot more difficult. I gave a whole spiel yesterday on these two guys, so I'm not going to do it again. Except that Melvin Ingram, to me, is just as good as a Von Miller or Khalil Mack. That's how disruptive he is, and that's how the Giants are going to have to treat it. It's going to be a real challenge. Last thing I'll mention, Lance, because I know you'll have to talk about this position, so I'll bring it up. The Chargers tight ends, I think, are a big target in the passing game for Phillip Rivers. The Giants, their troubles covering tight ends have been well documented over the course of the year. And if they can't get pressure, that's going to be a real challenge for their linebackers and safety in the middle of the field, dealing with Antonio Gates. But to me, the bigger threat is Hunter Henry, who I think, because Gates is still there, he doesn't get the notoriety or the numbers he would normally get, but he's a very, very good tight end.
Yeah, he had a great grab last week against the Eagles that pulled them within two. Unfortunately, the Chargers never got the football
back.
One
in the back
late
of the end
the
zone, right?
Exactly, yeah. Where he was able to slide both of his feet. They reviewed it, and they realized that the initial call was wrong, so they gave him credit for a touchdown. But first of all, Gates is still playing at a high level, even though he's up there like Jason Witten in his mid to late 30s. So you always need to account for him because he's always a significant red zone target. He's not necessarily going to do a lot of damage outside of the red zone. And Henry has not received a great deal of targets, mainly because, as I mentioned, the Chargers, if you look at time of possession, at bats, they've had similar issues like the Giants. But at this point, John, to me, it doesn't really matter how good or how talented the tight ends are that the Giants are going up against. It's an issue, no matter who's been on the field. There's five touchdowns in the last four games that the Giants have surrendered to a tight end. A tight end has scored against the Giants in every single game this season. So if you're the Chargers, of course, you're going to look to target the likes of Gates and Henry. And Henry is a little bit more athletic at this point in his career because he's younger. But, you know, this is a big challenge. This is another statement opportunity for not just the linebackers. I mean, Cameron Brate caught that pass on Landon Collins to set up the game-winning field goal for Nick Folk. So this is not just a matter of, you know, where's Keenan Robinson, what's going on, when he was supposed to be the coverage linebacker. You know, I think the safeties have some responsibility in all of this as well.
Absolutely. And finally, we should mention that since Paul Perkins was ruled out, Wayne Gallman will split carries with Orleans Darkwa, and it'll be another chance for him. And I mentioned it yesterday, got to hold on to the football. He had one fumble, and I really did fumble a second time. I thought if the Bucs would have challenged that second one, I think it would have been ruled a fumble late in that game, deep inside Buccaneer territory when the Giants were driving down in that direction. He's got to hold on to the football. I interviewed him yesterday for our radio pregame show on Sunday. He had two MEs in the game, and something that does missed assignments. They're trying that mental errors. That's what that ME stands for. And so he's going to try to fix those this week. But hopefully, for the Giants, the way they're thinking is that they can get some type of consistent run game going with Gallman, who maybe is, at least in his first game, showed to be a little bit more decisive than what we've seen from some of the other guys on the roster, namely Paul Perkins.
Yeah, he certainly provided a spark. He also, I thought, did a nice job in terms of pass protection on the touchdown pass to Rhett Ellison.
The blitz up the middle, he got somebody.
He was able to take care of William Golston. I'm interested to see, John, because Darkwa looks like he'll likely return after dealing with the back injury.
He is not on the injury report, by the way.
So that's optimistic for him.
And neither is Beckham, by the way, I should point out.
Though Beckham's been dealing, it seems like, with tons of injuries every single week and still finds a way to carry himself out for the field for the game. But getting back to the Darkwa point, I'm just wondering whether or not they're going to try to find a way to balance both of them, or they're actually at the point where let's give most of the workload to Gallman and maybe mix in Darkwa here or there. Because, you know, it took time even late last season, John, if you recall, till Perkins was crowned the guy.
My guess is
they'll start to get into rhythm. I would agree with you, too. I think they're going to try to balance it out. I'd be very surprised if all of a sudden Gallman comes into his second game and, you know, gets everything.
And he's getting 27 carries.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Neither do I.
I think you're looking at 15 for one guy, 12 for another, 15 and 10, 12 and 14, whatever.
Well, if they could get those type of numbers, that would be by far one of the most balanced efforts so far this season, because I don't think they've gotten to that point, just off the top of my head, remembering how the carries have played out. Usually you're lucky if you get one guy with double-digit carries.
I mean, they haven't, frankly, had gotten enough first downs in a lot of these games to run it enough, and then when they have, they frankly have not been very successful doing it. All right, folks, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Travis in Queens will lead us off. Hi, Travis, how are you?
Hey, fellas, how you guys doing?
Doing great, Travis. What's up?
Good. Look, I think I got the solution for the defense. Tell me if I'm correct or I don't. So here's what I would do, right? I think the best move for Spag to do is move DRC to free safety. And here's why, because
No.
When we go nickel,
no.
The nickel pack.
Travis.
No.
Travis, no. Your eyes, DRC
well, no,
is.
Hold on. Listen.
Okay.
Look, the nickel package, our nickel package get gashed in the run game, right? And here's why, because I believe we used the nickel for Keenan Robinson and DRC to be on the field. So if you was to put DRC, let's say we're in a 4-3, going against like the Chargers or just anybody, put him in a 4-3 free safety, you could bring Collins down to help with the run or to cover a linebacker. How you guys think not?
Okay, so you're saying just in the base defense you want to put him at safety,
yeah.
So not in the nickel?
Right, like for the base.
All right, if in the base defense it makes maybe a little bit more sense, and I'll say this, he's really not that physical of a player, which I think you worry about.
Right.
Traditionally, DRC, he's not a great tackler either. We've had, you know, obviously they've had issues with Darian Thompson back there tackling.
Yeah.
I'm not sure putting DRC out there fixes that problem. DRC isn't exactly a guy that likes to mix it up and get into small areas and like hit a bunch of guys over the middle.
Yeah.
That's not his deal. He'll do a good job at the pass coverage part of it, sure, but I don't think you're solving your tackling issue very much, Travis, by having him out there at free safety.
And that's where you want to see improvement for in terms of the safety spot. Remember, he was the one that was on the play when Adam Humphries got the pass. He bumped off of Adam Humphries, and Humphries wound up turning it into a 38-yard gain. And if you're going to put him in the safety position, to your point, Travis, you want somebody that is going to embrace physicality, take good angles, and be able to tackle.
Right.
And I don't necessarily think that that's his number one strength. The other thing I want to add, and I'll let you continue here in a second, speaking of DRC, DRC is going to be so important in this game because one guy that we didn't talk about, John, off the top, Keenan Allen, who's their slot wide receiver, has been a first down machine this season. Every single time he gets the football, he's picked up a first down, he moves the chains. So the nickel corner, the guy that's going to be playing inside and usually seeing that slot wide receiver, to me, is going to play an integral role in this game, and usually that falls on the shoulders of DRC.
Right, but okay, that's a point well taken. But I think if you put DRC at free safety in the base, you would have your best players on the field for first and second down at least, and then you could do exotic things in a base front instead of nickel, you know. Like, nickel is really made for the pass and, it's really made for a pass and defense. And then also, the reason why we're getting hurt with the run is because they're stretching it. So I think if you were to put DRC at free safety in a base front, it would help the defense as a whole because it would help for the linebackers when teams run the stretches because that's what eats us up, you know, in the run game. The stretch run. So I think if you were to put him at free safety, it would help. And then you guys mentioned that, you know, he's not physical, but I don't think with all the best players on the field at one time, I don't think, you know what I mean, the chances of it coming down to DRC would be slim versus, you know what I mean, for him, he has to make a play or fill that spot.
Well, I understand your point, Travis. I just don't think that you can necessarily think about we just got to get our best 11 players on the field because you want to make sure that, especially since tackling is a problem, you want to make sure that you have your most efficient tacklers on the field. And, you know, that still gets back to the point, are you improving tackling if you put DRC at the free safety position? I think if you're a coach, that's the question you need to ask yourself. And the tackling issues, by the way, have been across the board, specifically with the corners, because if you go back to the last game, I mean, I remember there were plays where Janoris Jenkins was trying to seal off the edge, and he wasn't able to wrap up
Landon
guys.
Collins missed two tackles in the last game too.
So it's really across the board with a lot of those talented corners that are on this team right now.
But let me ask you guys this and I'll get off. Don't you think the reason why the corners that everybody you guys mentioned is missing tackles is because they really are forcing the issue. Like you know, they're trying to make plays.
No. Travis, it's very simple. Travis, they're not wrapping up. Travis, no. There's one reason they're not making tackles. They're not wrapping up. They're hitting with their shoulders. They're not wrapping their arms around the offensive player. That's why they're missing tackles.
Right, but that's my point. Instead of wrapping up, they're trying to, like, you know, like pop a player, whereas, you know, the ball may come out. You know, because that DRC play that you mentioned, he led with his shoulders.
Correct.
And
Humphries bounced right off of him.
He's trying to get the Right, he was trying to get the ball to come out.
Yeah, but you can try to get the ball with your shoulder and wrap up at the same time.
Yeah.
It isn't one or the other. You got some of the best tackling teams in the league can get the ball out because they get in there and they drop their head on the ball, they drop their shoulder on the ball, or they reach their arm around and pop it up. You can do all that while you wrap up and tackle the proper way.
So you guys are saying our run defense is getting gashed because they're not tackling, you think?
Yeah.
I think that's state of the obvious there, Travis.
I think that's a big part of it, and I do think at the linebacker level they aren't quite, as to quote the great Carl Banks, they're not in their gaps the way they should be either. There are too many holes on a lot of those stretch plays that you mentioned where these guys are turning up field and there's simply too much room. In between the defensive linemen, who for the most part I think are doing a decent enough job, though I don't think the ends have been quite as good against the run as we've seen in years past. And Travis, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And I think all those things together contribute to the problems with the running game.
Yeah, it's a number of factors. I know a lot of people this week, and I'm sure yesterday you may have even received calls about saying, well, this is because of the Jonathan Hankins loss. I think that's making it extremely simple in terms of trying to understand and providing rationale, John.
I think Dalvin Tomlinson's been fine.
Yeah, I don't think he's been a major issue. I think, like you said, the injuries on the defensive ends, that's the reason why the stretch runs are being effective.
Casillas' injury, too.
Correct.
Help.
The missed tackles by just about everybody is leading to – I mean, think about this. If you add up all the missed tackles, and I don't have them, and there really isn't any official number because it depends on the interpretation of who's ever watching the game. But, I mean, they must be giving up at least four or five additional first downs per game as a result of missed tackles. I mean, you add all of that up, I mean, that leads to an additional field goal, an additional touchdown. So, I mean, it's easy to understand how missed tackles are contributing to losses and contributing to additional yards and additional scores for the opposition. But I look at it as all three layers of the defense are contributing to the missed tackles. It's not just removing Jonathan Hankins and then seeing if his subs are finishing the plays just as effectively as he was.
From Big Dash 07088, why not put Andrew Adams back there, meaning free safety? Is he hurt or something? He played almost 20 snaps last week, Andrew Adams. So he did take some time away from Darian Thompson. In fact, Adams was on the field on the big O.J. Howard touchdown, for example.
Well, and Spags indicated that they were going to continue to rotate those two guys,
correct,
even though Darian Thompson is now healthy because Adams showed them enough last season. And that just goes back to show what you just said, John. It's not so simple to even remove a guy from the field and then bring in the guy off the bench because this is a team-wide issue right now in terms of missed tackling. And, Spags even mentioned when he spoke to the media the other day, he said he has emphasized that he does not want to see anybody else on this team tackling with their shoulder, that they have to start wrapping them up. And, one of the things he pointed was, and for those of you who may have come down to see a practice during training camp, they have that big ring that they utilize during practice. It's a donut, essentially.
It is a donut,
and
right,
they tackle wrapping up, and they practice that with the donut. But one thing with a donut, whether or not that will translate to the football field if you're not doing it on actual football players during the course of the week. That, I think, is perhaps the big question mark right now.
The donut doesn't fight back.
Yes, exactly.
It just falls over.
The donut is not going to give you a stiff arm.
No, exactly.
When Garrett Blunt is going to run at you, correct, down the right sideline.
Joe in Pennsylvania on line four. He's up next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, hi, guys. It's been a nightmare, so I'm not really sure. It's just going to take a team game for us and all stick in there, like a tug of war. We all got to – the offensive line, the defensive line, the specialty teams, the coaching, penalties, these are all that's attributed to these losses.
Joe, you're right. You got to play better. In every aspect of the game, every part of the game, there's been too many mistakes. You're absolutely right.
That's really what it is, Mac doing his calling, the first thing, you got to be on offense is, you got to protect Eli. That has to be number one.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then trying to mix in the run more, you hear so much here, he should be running it more and this and that. I mean, it's everything. And the receivers catching the ball, the linemen blocking, and you've been talking about the defense. And then the penalties, And it really is a team thing, and we got to stick together. And, everybody's got to be on, if it's a tug of war, we got to have that rope on our side, everybody holding on and doing their part. And not whatever we're doing is hurting the team, Whatever we do don't hurt the team any more than need be. So that's really what I wanted to say. And I was to ask about that one receiver I forget we had and we let go. We brought back to the practice squad. Was he at
Travis
all,
Rudolph?
Yeah, was he at all active in any of these games?
No. He's still in the practice squad.
I didn't think I saw him, though. So, yep. Well.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, that's really, I said, we really have to stick together as a team, and that's the only way we're going to get out of it, you know? So, I mean, a couple plays here or there, everybody could say it, and all these games, it could have turned it around and at least have us 2-2, but that's the only way we're going to turn it around. So thanks for taking my call.
Thanks
Bye.
For calling in, Joe. Appreciate it.
Hi, Joe.
And I know it sounds simple, folks, but. And, you know, Lance uses the word execute, and that's fine. I'm going to put it in even simpler terms. Play better. Don't screw up as much. Stop making mistakes. Stop missing tackles. Stop dropping passes. Play to your talent level. And I think that's why I think it's so frustrating this year and why I think before the year we talked about this team the way we did because of their talent level. But, Lance, I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind this team so far this year has not played to their talent level. And that has to change. They have to simply play better football.
Well, I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think you could say that about every single level, every single facet of this team. I also think that there's been a lot of inconsistencies on this team too, John. And I think that plays into the lack of execution where, you know, sometimes you have a guy do bounce back and step up, but then you don't have the complementary pieces to help the cause. I mean, think about this. We were talking about the first two games of the season. I think the defense did enough to keep them in the games, but what happened? Offense wasn't scoring enough, special teams breakdowns. Okay, so now the last two games, right, the offense starts to show some signs of life. The offense picks up the slack. The offense does enough, you figure, to at least win games. But what do you have now? Take a back seat, the defense, and then you still have the special teams mishap. So what's happening is they are making progress, in fairness, in certain areas, but then some other facet takes a back seat, takes a step back, and then you're back to square one. So, I mean, they have yet to have a game where, forget clean football, but you feel like all three parts have done enough to not shoot themselves in the feet. Have yet to have that game yet.
I want to throw one other thing out there too, Lance. And I think this is important to note. And we'll get back to your calls in a second. I know the link on Giants.com was down, by the way. But it is back up, so thank you for joining us on the website. It was up on the mobile app earlier. We talked before the year, and this was the thing that I focused on a lot, about how the big chunk plays for the Giants last year were down from 2015, and that was one of the reasons the offense wasn't the same last year. Well, you know what? The trend continues. How many runs of 20-plus yards do the Giants have?
I know Darqua had one.
That's it.
That was the only one I remembered.
There are only three teams with zero. So fourth
at the
fewest,
bottom of the barrel.
And they're tied with five other teams with one run of 20 yards or more. Now you get it. The Giants are on a good running team. You understand that, right? You get it. The Giants, on the other hand, in terms of yards passing per game, are seventh in the league. That's a pretty good number, right? How many pass plays of 20 yards or more do you think the New York Football Giants have? Through four games. Take a guess.
I want to say they have maybe seven?
Seven.
Okay.
Seven. That is fewer than two per game. Do you know how many teams have fewer pass plays of 20-plus yards than the New York Football Giants? Take a guess.
In the NFL, how many have less than seven
Yes.
over the course of the first four?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say seven.
Four.
Okay.
And one of the teams, the Miami Dolphins, have only played three games. So I'm not even going to count them.
Doesn't really count because they don't have enough substance.
Exactly. Well, and one more game, they probably would have gotten at least one or two passes of 20-plus yards, right? Yeah. So the only three teams that have played four games that have fewer pass plays of 20 yards or more than the Giants are the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Miami Dolphins, and the Baltimore Ravens.
So wait, the Bucs who have played less games than the Giants have more? What about the Bucs?
Oh,
the Bucs,
much more. The Bucs.
Well, Grant, did the Bucs just played an extra game because they played last night?
They have 12.
Okay, so there you go. And that says a lot.
Lance, the Patriots have 24. The Los Angeles Rams, have 21. They have three times the amount of pass plays over 20 yards in the Giants. Three times. Do you consider the Minnesota Vikings an explosive offense?
No, I think they have explosive players. I don't think their offense
they
is necessarily
explosive. They have 19 pass plays of 20 yards or more. 19. The Cardinals have 20. The Cleveland Browns have 18.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I think that is a great comparison in terms of where the Giants are compared to
and
the rest of the
league. It's not even close.
But let's take it a step further, John. If you look at over the last few years, big explosive plays.
And by the way, you can't make explosive plays on this defense. They've given up big plays this
certainly.
Year.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I mean, especially in the running game because the Chargers have given up over 160 yards per game. But back to your point, and this is why I want to bring this up, because I think if you look at over the last few seasons, 95% of the big pass explosive plays, John, is probably Odell Beckham off a catch and run.
Oh, absolutely.
So
no
that,
question
to
about
me,
it.
Is more troubling, though. That's why I'm bringing that up. Because most of these other offenses that you alluded to, you could say, you know, they send their guys vertically down the field, then their quarterback is throwing a 40-yard bomb, and they hook up in stride.
And they have time to throw a 40-yard bomb.
True. Whereas I think the Giants have relied on trying to get the guy out in space in short yardage and then have him create his opportunities down the field. Same thing with the running game. You hope that a guy forces a few misses and then can get up the field. So even if in 15, which is the last time the Giants had a number of explosive plays, I guarantee you if you go back, Beckham's responsible for a lot of them.
Sure.
And they're not necessarily all 50-yard throws down the field. So,
and Beckham has been banged up this year too, which is a factor.
He has, but I don't want to hear that they don't have enough weapons outside of him to make those plays. Engram, Marshall, Shepard are more than capable of getting down the field and having those type of plays where the Giants necessarily wouldn't be so low on the totem pole. So it's not the lack of personnel. It goes back to execution. Eli not having enough time. He's been getting rid of the football extremely quickly. So how do you have explosive plays, John? If he's throwing the football within 2 seconds, you're not giving your wide receivers enough time to get down the field. So that has contributed to that. The running game not forcing guys to come down to the box.
No play action.
Okay. So that's another contributing factor why there's not a lot of explosive plays. Those are two significant factors as to why teams are able to get down the field.
And defensively, they've been okay. They've only given up 10 pass plays of 20 yards or more. That's ranked 11th in the league. That's okay.
They've had an issue with the run plays, though, this season. That has been a noticeable change.
And that's what I'm going to next. Well, they've given up 5 rushing plays of 20 yards or more, which is tied for second most in the league. Only the Jets have given up more, which is 6. So, again, big plays. Guys, in the NFL these days, the way these teams scheme, it's hard to sustain these long drives down the field. It's really hard to do. It's a difficult thing. You got to score with big plays. And the Giants got away with it last year more because their red zone offense was so good, and they were really good at getting the ball into the end zone, or at least good enough. Their red zone offense this year has not been good. It's been worse. If you're not going to make big plays and your red zone offense isn't going to be good, that's how you're going to wind up where you are.
Well, and their red zone defense was extremely effective last year, too. We're talking about the top-ranked red zone defense. But, you know, this is the luxury of when you have a stingy defense. Your offense can get away with games where you put together 17 to 20 points. What we're seeing now this season is, John, you can't rely on your defense. You no longer have that luxury. So now the offense can't get away with those 17 to 20-point performances.
And they're also not being given as many opportunities to score. Last year, the defense got so many three-and-outs, Lance, and after the Giants' offense would punt, they'd get the ball right back and get another shot at it. They're not getting as many chances like that because the defense, you mentioned the red zone, the third-down defense is a lot worse, too. It's something 8 or 9% worse than it was last year, so the offense isn't getting as many shots at it because they're not getting the ball back. So put all those things together, you got problems. All right, back to the calls after I had that little aside. And by the way, the Giants' red zone offense wasn't great last year either. I think they were middle of the league, maybe 20th land, something like that. I'd have to compare last year to this year. I did not look at that. That was off the top of my head. Let's go to Rudy in Long Island. He's up next. Hi, Rudy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Rudy. What's up?
Good, good. I haven't had a chance to call much at all this season, but
okay.
I just have something that I need to – I have two things I need to vent about, and I need you guys to put it to bed already. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'm so tired of hearing certain Giants fans talk about it.
Okay.
And also have two quick questions.
Sure.
So the first thing I need you guys to put to bed for me is I need all of these Giants fans to stop saying that Eli is not a good quarterback. Enough is enough. I'm tired of hearing put Geno in, Eli is done, blah, blah, blah. Have they not been watching these games? Yes, we're losing, but Eli's arm has been consistent. He's been throwing bullets to these guys. These last few games, he's even putting himself on the line and running.
Yeah, Rudy, I'll say this. I don't think he was great the first two games, but I think the last two games he played very well. He played very, very well the last two games. He didn't get a whole lot of help. These last two games are not on Eli Manning. He did everything he could. And even if you look at the Pro Football Focus grading, who usually is not very generous to Eli, they're not a big fan of his, they graded him extremely well these last two games. They've said he's played well. So if you want to look for a nonpartisan place that looks at these players, there's one for you. Two games, I think Eli's played very good football. Now, what are your two questions?
My two questions are, first, do you think, and not a knock on Coach McAdoo, because I still have faith. I'm a diehard Giants fan, so even if we're the worst team in the league, I'm like, I'm all about it. We're still going to win, damn it. But do you think the way Coach, the calling and, like, the one-yard line and instead of just taking the field goal, you know, do you think that has more an effect on us winning the game as opposed to, you know, him trying to go for it and you know, with the other mistakes that, yes, the team has made, but losing those, you know, 6 points on two field goals, do you think that has a bigger impact? That's the first question. And then my other question is, with the way our offensive line is playing, I wasn't sure if you guys have answered this or not. I didn't get to listen yesterday. But with the way the offensive line has been playing this last game and last two games, really, and kind of helping Eli a little bit, even though he's gotten some pressure, he didn't get sacked the last game, do you think that they would keep that combination even if some of the, you know, I think it was our right tackle, was it Jerry that got hurt?
No, Bobby Hart. Bobby Hart, yeah, was not in the game.
Bobby Hart. Even though our right tackle, you know, if they come back, do you think you would keep the formula that they've been using as bringing, I think it was Wynn coming in to help with a block and something.
Well, you're talking about Kerry Wynn
as a
fullback.
Call,
I mean,
Rudy,
he wasn't in as a fullback the entire game. There was one play right around the goal line.
And they can't keep the same configuration as Weston Richburg's out this week. So they're going to have to switch it up. And if John Jerry can't go, then you got a problem there, too. So I think they're just doing the best they can. They did help Flowers a lot last week on his side with a lot of chips and stuff from the running back and the tight end. I saw that a lot on tape when I rewatched the game this week. As for the first point, look, if you obviously told the coach and, you know, gave him a time machine and you saw that you didn't make it on fourth down, would he take the 3 points? Absolutely. And you'd rather have those 3 points on the board, but that's not how the world works. So you got to move on from it.
Yeah, anybody who questions the decision-making earlier in games and says you take the points, you're operating under the circumstances at hand. You're not operating under the circumstances that you're going to score 24 points in the fourth quarter against the Eagles, John. Here's another thing that I get irritated over with. You know, everybody points to the lack of points in the Bucs game. First of all, Nick Folk missed two field goals and an extra point. If Nick Folk makes both of those field goals and the extra point, that game is not nearly as close down the wire.
And by the way, Ben McAdoo made that point in his
conference. He said they were lucky to be in the game, was his paraphrased exact quote, essentially.
Absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That jumped out to me.
Me too.
You know, you don't hear that. He said we were lucky to be in the game.
It was his first quote of the conference call. And in fact, let me see if I can bring up that transcript for people here just so they can see what it was. I believe that was on the Monday conference call.
It
right,
was.
Lance, if I'm
not
mistaken.
And
let's
it was,
I
think, in one of his opening statements.
Yes.
Where
let's
he
see.
Said after reviewing the film, and that jumped out to me when I heard that statement because it reminded me of all the debates about everybody talking about
Here's
the points.
Here's the quote. This is how we started the conference call, wasn't even prompted with a question. Let's start with the game. This is Ben McAdoo. We are 0-4, and our film verifies it. A lot of problems that are correctable, and it starts with blocking, tackling, catching the football, kicking and punting, especially in the fourth quarter. And we've talked about it, the special teams, the blocks, blah, blah, blah. Back to Ben. At times, we look like we are pressing. Other times, it looks like we're hesitant. Really, we're fortunate to be in the ball game. Yesterday. Quote again. Really, we were fortunate to be in the ball game yesterday. Tampa missed two field goals and a PAT.
That's 7 points right there. So that's a touchdown off the board. If you want to look at it through the Giants' lens, then in fairness, you have to look at it through the lens of the opposition. You can't just say, well, the Giants lost 25-23, so if the Giants would have went for an early field goal, they would have won the game. Well, then I'm going to give also Tampa Bay a few more points and opportunities back, too.
What is everybody saying this morning about the Bucks and Patriots game last night?
Well, it's the same debate about the whole missed field goal issues with Nick Folk. I mean, I think you could even be critical of the onside kick. I was having this debate with people. If they would have kicked it, even if it goes for a touchback, John, maybe Gostkowski doesn't get the field goal, and I know you're shaky about Nick Folk, but I would have put him out there for at least a game-winning field goal as opposed to stretching it for the touchdown.
And
there.
Then the timeout management, too, when they call the timeout with the two-minute warning and all that sort of stuff. 201-939-4513. But look, if you're a fan and you first guess it when it happens, that's great. And that's obviously – that's the whole point of being a fan.
Well, and you're
it's
entitled
fun.
To
agree,
do that.
You disagree.
It's not a crime to
and
do
look,
that.
And look, I get it. If you – there's a legitimate point to be made where if you go by the NFL book – you know, fourth and five, first quarter, you're probably not going to go for it there by the book. But based on the circumstances that Ben McAdoo saw, and he explained this, he thought he had a good play call, and he thought based on how the game was going in the team, he thought it was the right thing to do at the wet field, tough to kick on the wet field, it had just rained, and all that stuff put together. Scott in Washington, D.C., he's up next. Hi, Scott.
Guys, happy Friday.
Happy Friday,
you know, on Rudy's call, I haven't heard anyone say Eli is not a good quarterback. The point is... He's on the back nine. He's on the 18th hole. What is this team going to do in the future?
Oh, and that's fair.
He is not going to be, you know, making Pro Bowls at age 40.
Right, you wouldn't think.
He's not going to be making Pro Bowls at age 39. You got to do something now.
Well, they drafted Davis Webb.
Well, I told you last week when the Giants are 3-10, let's see him start three games.
Okay.
I mean, listen, that's a fair point. They could certainly put him in the second half of games if they're mathematically out of it. I think that's a reasonable request. But you're not doing it now after you're 0-4, though.
Right.
All right. You know, this is a mediocre team. It's a mediocre franchise. We can argue about whether they're toast right now for the season. But look at the past 5 years. 9 wins, 9-7 wins, 6 wins, 6 wins. Last year, 11. This offense last year averaged less than 2 touchdowns a game. That is pathetic. That's embarrassing. They could not average more than 2 touchdowns a game. That's 14 points. Throw in a couple of field goals, maybe you get to 20. They did. They won a game last year 10-7. They won a game last year 21-20.
Scott, we know the offense last year wasn't very good. We've talked about it a million times. What's your point?
Well, my point, as I just said, is this is a mediocre franchise. It's not just this season. It's since the last Super Bowl. The team has fell into disrepair. It needs to start thinking about the future. One other thing.
Okay, but what's your point, Scott, though?
Scott, when you keep saying the future, we just said they drafted Davis Webb if you're concerned about the long-term viability of Eli Manning, so they're at least looking through that lens. The defense was repaired in free agency last year. Unfortunately, it's taken a step back this year. I mean, to say that there haven't been any changes, I think is a little misleading.
I don't think I said the words, there haven't been any changes. That's the way to do it. I think the history of this franchise is through draft choices, not free agents. I think we're seeing the effect of trying to rebuild a team with, you know, great players. Olivier Vernon, unfortunately, maybe his body's breaking down. Janoris Jenkins, unfortunately, maybe his body's breaking down.
Time out. Scott, Janoris Jenkins might be the best corner in football this year. If you want to complain about the other guys, that's fine. Jenkins is fantastic.
I agree. Great player. They're not producing. They're not producing numbers. When we argue about whether
Janoris Jenkins
JPP
is producing.
Janoris Jenkins,
don't put Janoris Jenkins in there. Scott, if you want to talk about the other guys, that's fine. Do not lump Janoris Jenkins in there. He's been the best corner in football this year. Okay?
All right. The big signing this year was JPP. He's not putting up numbers.
That's fair.
Yeah. Vernon, too, because Vernon's banged up.
I just want to ask you one quick thing.
Yes, sir.
You know, I think you've heard this before, John. I think some of the callers are feeling this way. They don't feel that some of the other callers are being treated fairly. They're being ridiculed. They're being hung up on. They're being told their comments aren't fair. Same thing happened to me when I called several, you know, in the springtime and asked Paul why he thought it was a good idea for the head coach to keep 2 timeouts in his pocket at halftime of the playoff game last year. You know Rodgers is going to throw a Hail Mary. I think the ball is at the 35, 37, maybe in the 40-yard. You know he's going to go for the end zone. Why do you go into the locker room at halftime with two timeouts in your pocket instead of calling a timeout, telling your safeties to come over to the sideline? You point to one of them and say, you sit on the back line and the other one sits on the front line of the goal line. And don't move from there. Start the play there, and don't move from there. Paul Dottino said, "I don't know what you're talking. I don't know football.
Scott,
I don't know what I'm talking about."
Was
bad execution.
Do you think that the Packer player got behind the Giants' defensive backs?
He did. Look at the play. Look at Landon Collins' comments after the play. He took exception. He took responsibility. And said, I made a mistake. I let someone get behind me.
Well, look, honestly, I would have to go back and look at the tape, Scott. I don't remember the exact way that thing was set up, so I'm not going to say you're right or you're wrong because I don't remember. I don't know. But you keep
– just look at the play. The point I'm making, though, is going to the – why does the coach think it's a better idea not to ice
Scott,
the kicker
not gonna
before a 61-yard field goal?
Scott, I'm not relitigating that timeout management in the first half of the playoff game 9 months later. What are we doing here? I'm not relitigating the play 9 months later. It's a waste of everyone's time. What's your larger point? You start to make a larger point. Get to your larger point. Otherwise, we're going to say goodbye.
The larger point it would be a good thing if people like Russ and some of the other hosts were not quite as dismissive of the callers who are trying to voice their opinions. It's not really sufficient to say, well, we only deal with facts here when the hosts of the show offer their opinions all the time.
Right, Scott, fair. But at the same time,
and it would be nice if they weren't dismissed. I appreciate your
listening. I appreciate it, Scott. Thank you. Good stuff. And look, here's the thing. You guys are supposed to call it opinions. That's the point. We welcome them. That's fun. But at the same time, if we disagree with that opinion, we're allowed to say that too. That's why we're here. This isn't, you just click the caller on, you guys give your spiel and you say goodbye. It's a back and forth. If you guys say something and we disagree with it, it's our job to say why we disagree with it. I can't speak for other hosts and how they operate. I'm not going to do that. That's not why I'm here. Lance won't do that either. I can just tell you how we run our shows, and I like to think that when you guys come on, Scott, we gave you plenty of time to make your point. You're on for probably around 6 or 7 minutes, and you made your point, and we disagreed with you, and that's fine. That's why we're here. And we're not going to comment on anybody else. If you have a problem with them, call up and talk to them. Don't talk to us.
Well, disagreeing with opinions is not dismissing opinions.
Correct.
It's just not necessarily seeing it through your lens. But, I mean, I think we constantly deal with opinions, and we constantly give the callers the opportunity. But I don't think that everybody who hosts this show has the responsibility to agree with what every single thing that comes out of the mouths
Correct.
Of the callers. But once again, you know, every host has their own different way of handling callers. I can't put myself in the shoes of all those individual hosts. So, I mean, if you have a specific issue with a different host, I mean, you got to take it up with that host. I mean, that I think is the best way to operate moving forward here.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the calls and say what's up to Len in Columbia, Maryland on line 4. Hi, Len.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing great,
hey,
Len.
Good question. Did you get the burns, John?
You know what? A bunch of my people that I travel with had plans,
okay.
And a couple other people didn't, and I showed them the menu, and they said, I don't want to spend that much money. So I skip burns this time. It's a little pricey.
It is a special occasion type of place.
That is true.
In all honesty, John.
Yes.
It is. But, hey, sometime, especially if you got the wife with you and you're in Tampa, you got to put it on the list.
Sounds good.
There you go. You know, the previous caller, just a couple of things. He was trying to make a point right at the end, and you guys were doing a very good job in handling it, and really. But if I had one minor suggestion, you got to give the callers, when I say you, I mean the group, a chance to express. I mean, we're not – I mean, I talked for a living, so –
So do we, Len.
I can handle it a
So
bit.
Do we. I think we can all relate to
that. There are some folks who don't.
Right.
And sometimes it takes a second or third or fourth sentence from them to be able to get what they really mean out. And I know it's only an hour show. You got 12 callers on the line. It's a tough mix. It's a tough balance. But sometimes they need another – I think we need another 30 seconds to let them – explain what they said
now,
before we jump on it.
I'm going to assume that you don't mean the two of us.
Oh, no. Okay. You guys, listen, the way you responded to the previous caller who had many good points was as professional as you can get, John. It was great, you know. So that would be my suggestion. Even if it takes one less phone, you know, you get one less person on the phone, an opportunity for someone to explain what they mean by the words that they used.
I understand. Let's talk about the team now. Okay?
What do you got for us today, Len?
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, I wanted to go back to one other thing on the previous caller. I mean, the franchise is 90. It's been around for 92 years. I mean, these people know what they're doing.
And they won five. And they have won five Super Bowls.
You know, I mean,
four,
well,
sorry,
and I mean, 15 World Championship games we've been in. We've won eight World Championships, four Super Bowls. I mean, this ownership, I mean, it's their business. This is what they do. This is how they made their money in 1925, and it's the way they make their money in 2017.
And no one in this building, Len, that is part of this organization will tell you it's not extremely disappointing they haven't won a playoff game since 2011. Everyone in this building feels that way, and everybody in the building knows it.
Yeah. And I'm with the caller. I'm frustrated. Everybody's a little frustrated. What have you done for me lately guy. I'm not a big legacy guy, but in the end, when you think about it, I mean, these guys will figure it out, and Sean Marr will figure it out. I mean, it's his business. He knows what's best, and if it means making changes, he'll make changes. I mean, you look at their success. It's hard to argue with it. Let me talk about Sunday. Listen, I missed the first 20 minutes, so maybe I'm going to repeat some of the things you've got.
That's right. Go right ahead.
They got to get Bosa and Ingram blocked.
Easier said than done, Len.
You got to get them blocked. I mean, Eric and Justin, you know, they got to play their best games of the year. These guys are good, really
good. And, Len,
good.
It's not just them.
And if they
are going to need help.
If they move Bosa inside for a play or two, I mean, it's going to be chaos
guys
in there.
Yeah.
I mean, so they got to get those guys blocked. They got to get the tight ends. They got two tight ends. I mean, it's going to be a pleasure to see Antonio Gates on Sunday. I mean, geez, the guy is –
he's a Hall of Famer.
One of the two or three best of all time.
He's a Hall of Famer, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the two or three best of all time. But we got to get him covered. And we know if they get inside the 10-yard line, we know what they're going to do. Gates is going to release. He's going to go 1 yard into the end zone. He's going to turn around. He's going to look at Rivers, and Rivers is going to throw him the ball. I mean, it's as simple as that. We got to bump him coming off the line inside the 10. Just bump Gates. Goodson, come on. You got to play a ball game tonight. Come on, Landon. You got to play a ball game. Let's go. Let's cover Antonio Gates. The other guy's good.
Hunter Henry. He's just as effective. You were talking about Gates. I mean Henry is a big red zone target, too.
I want you – listen, if he throws an 8-yard touchdown pass to Gates 1 yard into the end zone on Sunday, I want you to think about me, John.
I will do that, Len. Well, no problem.
Knock that pass.
I mean, listen, Len, you know, as much as I'd love to give you credit –
I've been saying this for seven years,
John.
I'm asking you the question.
Yes.
Is Eli playing Sunday?
Of course he is.
We got a shot.
Thank you, Len.
That's Len's famous line. Well,
good stuff.
What I was going to say is, I mean, as much as I'd love to give Len some credit, I mean, we've been seeing them target tight ends in the red zone every single week. So if Gates gets a touchdown and Henry gets a touchdown, I'm not necessarily going to be stunned or surprised.
I would not put that in the bold prediction category. No.
I don't think he's going out on a limb with that statement, Len.
No.
So.
All right, I got three more callers, and we'll try to get all three in the next 7 minutes. We got to get off in one here. Let's go to Nick in the Meadowlands. Up next. Hi, Nick.
How are we doing, Nick?
I would say that Eli is on the back nine, not on the 18th hole. You know, so.
Yes, I think that's fair.
I would
put him on the 15th or
16th
hole.
Done, you know, 10 games from now. Still, you know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with Eli.
That's fair. I agree.
We all know that. You know, and I agree with you, John, you know, a couple things in the first game, you know, adjusting and everything. But the last two games have been great. You know, and to see him take off running like that, I love that. You know, that means I want to win. I want to get that first down. I want to win. And if everybody played like that, you know what I mean, with that extra determination, you know what I mean, making tackles, you know, that's the biggest thing. And Janoris Jenkins, really? What did he do against Dez Bryant? What did he do against all these top receivers? The biggest thing is what we keep talking about. They need to wrap up and tackle. They're professionals. They need to do this. That's what the biggest deal is. Because like Lance was saying, first couple weeks, you know, not giving up a lot of points. Last couple weeks, what did they score last week? 23?
23.
What did they score the week before?
24.
What did they score against the Eagles?
24.
So almost 50 points in 2 weeks.
Yep.
You know, the defense is, and it's not even that. It's harmony. It's got to come in a harmony, all three phases. That's what we all know. You know what I mean? I don't want to hear about the franchise. You got four Super Bowls and four NFL championships. There's nothing wrong with the franchise. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with the Giants. It's not mediocre. You know what I mean? One
well,
of the best
every
organizations,
team,
if not the best in all of sports.
Listen, Nick, every team goes through cycles, and you hope that you can avoid the down cycles.
You can't win every
in
year.
Terms, no, you can't. You just want to be
we
able to maintain
to happen,
consistency. That's
and,
what
you
hope.
Know, these things happen, but come on. It ain't like, you know, 25, 30 years ago. You draft guys and you're keeping them.
And here's what you I know? Would say, Nick. If you hand over the last 31 years of Giants football to pretty much any other organization
they're
in football,
it.
Except for the Patriots and maybe Dallas because they won those three in a row in the early 90s, any other team will probably side up and say, okay, give me.
And look at the Patriots. We saw them last night. You're seeing, you know, the defense isn't doing too good. And, you know, Tampa Bay, again, you know, they should have had a lot more points on the board, but a guy's missing field goals. The same thing goes in the game against us.
Yep.
You know, if he makes those field goals, then who knows, right?
Thank you, Nick. We got to run, pal. Sorry about that. I got to make sure I get in my final two callers. Didn't mean to cut you off. Call back on Monday. We'll get you back up. Let's go to Phil in North Carolina. Hi, Phil.
Yeah, hi, guys. It's been I've been trying to get you for a couple of weeks here, like 3 weeks.
Well, I'm happy you're in. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was surprised when I got through. Anyway, a couple of things. I'm going to make a couple of comments, and then I'll go to my specific. Let me summarize. Everyone is frustrated. the franchise is frustrated. The fans are very frustrated. So we're all on short fuses. So when the host seemed, maybe not dismissive, but short, it's going to rile people up.
I understand that. Yeah. That's understandable.
But you know, let me just say, when you two came back on, and some of the others came back, Jeff comes back, you know, I kind of breathe a sigh of relief because I was aggravated about the games, okay? And then I don't want to be aggravated about the host.
Let's talk about the team, Phil. So what do you got for us, Phil? Stick on the field.
Anyway, so thanks for letting me air that out. And one other comment is I want this franchise to be elevated. I'm a lot older than you guys, and I had to live through 1981 was the first playoff game I remember, and it stirred so much emotions when Rob Carpenter ran crazy. I had to wait 17 years for that.
Yeah, Phil, you make a great point. Giant fans that are complaining now didn't live through the 70s, and I didn't live through the 70s either, but I've done enough research to know what the 70s were like. That was bad. This is not that bad.
Yeah, it was horrible. We did have a good defense, good linebackers then, and, with Van Pelt and those guys and Kelly and then Carson and so forth. So I have a good perspective, just as well as Paul Dottino, basically similar. But all right, so let me get to my point. Is I've been frustrated not just for a number of years with McAdoo's play calling, but even Tom's play calling. We get 7 yards, second and three, Bowman gets 7 yards, and I'm screaming at the TV, "Let's put this game away. Let's run 2 times, get those 3 yards, a yard and a half, and we basically almost can win this game. 2 passes.
Yeah, but Phil, the first pass hit Brandon Marshall right in the hands, and it should have been a first down. It was a good call.
That was 2nd and 3.
It was an easy catch.
He makes that catch and moves the chain.
And if he catches that ball, nobody cares.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the play calling. It's the lack of execution. We can't necessarily mix the two together. You have to look at them separately because if Marshall makes the catch, it's a first down, and then maybe they're not going for the home run to Odell Beckham under those circumstances.
Right, and the other thing, too, and I think I've learned this in the 25 years I've listened to sports talk radio, and in the 15 years I've been doing it since I graduated college, or even in college since 1999, if you want to go back to when I hosted a show then, when teams lose, people want to blame the coaches, they want to blame play calling in the NFL. That's how it goes. Doesn't matter who the coach is, what the team is, that's how it goes. Period.
Well, it's the same thing where it irritates me in terms of the quarterback records, and everybody points the finger at the quarterback, and that only really tells a very minute part of the story.
It's the same thing, like in the NBA. When the thing goes wrong for a team, people, especially in New York, and this is the thing about New York. When things go bad in New York, people look at the best player on the team and they look at the coach. And those are the two people they always try to blame. Look at the Knicks. They haven't won in forever. Who always gets blamed for what happens? It's the coach and it's the best player on the team.
Well,
even going back to Ewing, the Knicks were making the NBA Finals, and they were winning 50 games every year. Who did fans blame for them not winning? They blame Patrick Ewing. It wasn't the fact he didn't have enough help around him,
yeah,
and that John Starks and Charles Oakley were the best players he ever played with. No, it was the 50 best player of all time in the Hall of Famer's fault. So that's just how New York works.
Well, and then in 99, he was hurt. He wasn't even healthy.
Correct.
So, I mean, blame Chris Dudley more so than Patrick Ewing.
Chris Dudley was hurting in that final series, too.
Yeah, exactly.
They had Larry Johnson guarding Tim
there
Duncan.
There you go.
Anyway.
So they do blame the executive staff, though, too, in New York City as well. I think you got to throw them in there
but
as well.
It's never the supporting cast that gets
no,
pointed
very
at, is
rarely,
my point.
Correct.
It's always the stars and
yes,
the people running things.
Now, basketball and football are a little different because of the amount of players and personnel, but your point is well taken.
Yes.
In football, if you look at the complementary pieces, you should be doing the same thing in other
you're
sports.
You're right. One player in basketball obviously has more impact than one player in football just because of the number of players on the floor, but in New York, that's how it – I mean, whatever a baseball team does bad, what's the first thing people say? Fire the manager. Happens all the time, whether it's the manager's fault or not. All right, let's go to Mike in Fort Myers. He's up next. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. Missed much of your early stuff. Interested in the defensive tackles.
Ours or theirs?
It doesn't appear that we're getting any push at all.
Ours.
And it's making, in my opinion, very, very hard for JPP and Vernon to get any pressure because the front of the pocket is holding up. And I think we lost something from Hankins. Has anybody made any comments about the performance of the tackles?
I think that's a fair point. I don't think we've seen a lot of push in the middle to get sacks from the tackle position. And again, I'm not sure we saw much of that last year either, to be quite honest with you. I do agree. I don't think it's fair to just point at JPP and Vernon and say that's why we're not getting enough pressure. It definitely is a team effort, Lance.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about Hankins earlier. I know, Mike, you mentioned that you were not listening from the beginning of the show, and I brought up the fact that that's been a big part of the narrative that
we
people are wondering.
More the run than the pass.
Correct. Though. We weren't necessarily talking about in terms of the pass rush. But remember, Hankins' numbers, Mike, fluctuated during the course of his career.
Absolutely.
He had no sacks. Then he had 7 sacks. Then he went down a little bit. So you weren't even getting necessarily an opportunity to pencil in every time Hankins is on the field or every single season, you know you're going to get this type of production.
And look, if you go back to Snacks Harrison's career, he's never been a sacks guy. He just hasn't been. He's gotten multiple years where he hasn't had
any sacks. 2.5 over the course of his
career.
Yeah.
And I think Dalvin Thomas has been fine.
To me, it seems that last year they got a little bit of a pushback on the pocket. This year it seems as if they're being held to a draw. And I leave it up to you guys who really watch film to tell me I'm wrong, because I don't get many giant games down here. So what I get is snippets. So
understand.
I depend on you guys to,
no, I appreciate
to square
that.
Me away.
And, Mike, I'll say this. I don't think the pass pressure up the middle has been great. I agree with you. But I also don't think it's that much different than it was last year.
Okay.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I would agree.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call, buddy. That's how I would look at it.
Yeah, I don't think there's been a huge disparity. I mean, clearly there's a disparity in terms of the production, the numbers.
And
but,
the pressure in general.
But
sure.
Look at how many sacks Hankins and Snacks gave you last season.
Right.
I mean, it's not as if those numbers were off the charts. Now, I understand pressure is not just sacks. Mike was referring to collapsing the pocket, allowing the defensive ends to make
the
sacks. Making
the quarterback uncomfortable.
A lot of factors go into penetration. And I don't remember watching games and even looking back at replays where you could say, wow, you know, Snacks and his complementary pieces are responsible for wreaking havoc on the quarterback. So I think it's a fair observation by Mike, but I don't think it's a huge drop-off from where they were with Hankins last year.
Agree. Folks, Chargers, Giants, we're back on Sports Radio 66 WFAN. The Yankees play at night. They're in
That's
the
right.
playoffs. Pre-game starts at 11:30 with this guy, myself, Jeff Fiegels, Paul Dottino, or if you're going to the game, go to the MetLife Gate. We'll be on the stage there. You can check out the show live, and then, of course, our post-game show right after the game on WFAN 101.9 FM and 660 AM on your radio
dial. We thank
dial.
Major League Baseball for cooperating with the schedule. So
yes.
Just wanted to make that
They always
apparent.
Want to try to get the Yankees in
Absolutely,
prime time.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you on Sunday as the Giants try to get their first win. Adios.
Have a good one.